The jet is real enough to fool a camera. Leather seats, champagne sweating in the glass. A man smiles like money has never said no to him. He calls himself a diamond dealer. He says danger follows him because success always does. The first message feels lucky. The second feels urgent. By the third day, he is flying her across borders and calling it fate. Then the tone shifts. Enemies are coming. His security team has gone dark. His accounts are frozen to protect her. He needs help now, just for a moment, just until morning. He promises repayment with interest and affection. He sends photos of bloodied guards. He types fast. He says there is no time to explain. She believes him because he made belief feel earned. Credit cards max out. Loans stack. Silence stretches. The jet disappears. The man does not. By the time the truth arrives, it does not knock. It drains accounts, ruins credit, and leaves love as the weapon that did the most damage. Chapter 1. The hook and the lie. The photos were built to stop this girl. Private jets. A wristwatch heavy enough to dent a table. Hotel lobbies where the ceiling lights made everything look expensive and permanent. The man in the photos smiled as if he had never waited for anything in his life. His name on the profile was Simon Leviev. He said he moved diamonds for a living. He said his work kept him in the air. The matches came quickly on Tinder. He did not linger in small talk. He pushed forward. Flights were booked within days. Five-star hotels replaced coffee shops. The speed felt flattering. It also felt intentional. He framed it as efficiency. "When you know what you want," he said, "you do not waste time." In person, the performance held. He arrived with drivers. He tipped in cash. He spoke about deals closing in Monaco and Tel Aviv as if they were errands. He paid for everything. He ordered for the table. He asked questions that made his dates feel chosen rather than chaste. He listened just long enough to mirror back a future that sounded mutual. What he did not do was leave a paper trail. Tickets appeared without receipts. Hotel rooms were booked under other names. The jet was never owned by him. It was leased. Borrowed. Sometimes it belonged to someone else entirely. None of that mattered at the beginning. The surface story was loud enough to drown out doubt. He spoke early about risk. Not his own. Theirs. He said success attracted enemies. He said rival dealers did not forgive easily. He said threats were part of the territory. It sounded like bravado, until it did not. He showed photos, guards with bruised faces, a car window shattered. The images arrived late at night, when fatigue lowered defenses. The first request did not feel like a request. It felt like a favor wrapped in concern. His accounts were frozen for security reasons, he said. It was temporary. Banks were cautious when violence entered the picture. He needed a bridge. A small one. He asked if she could put a charge on her card. He said he would wire the money back in the morning. The urgency was calibrated. He did not beg. He did not threaten. He expressed worry for her safety more than his own. He insisted on secrecy. Enemies watched everything, he said. The fewer people involved, the better. The payment went through. The repayment did not arrive. Instead, another message came. The situation had escalated. His security team advised him to stay mobile. He was booking flights under aliases. He said he hated asking again. He said he felt ashamed. He promised this would be the last time. It never was. The women later described the same pattern, with small variations. Intimacy first. Crisis second. Isolation always. He flooded their phones with constant contact. Good morning messages, late night reassurances, screenshots of supposed bank balances, each detail designed to keep the story coherent under pressure. He created a closed loop. Any doubt could be answered by something he had already planted. Why could he not access his funds? Because enemies tracked transfers. Why did he need her card? Because hers was clean. Why the rush? Because people were getting hurt. The scale increased quietly. A few thousand became tens of thousands. Credit limits were tested and raised. Loans were suggested. He framed debt as loyalty. "If you believe in us," he said, "you will help me survive this." The women were not reckless. Many had stable jobs. Some had savings. None believed they were signing up for ruin. They believed they were helping a partner in danger. They believed repayment was imminent. They believed love required trust under stress. Behind the scenes, the man moved continuously. Different cities, different women, the same script. Money from one funded the lifestyle used to seduce the next. It was not theft in the dark, it was extraction in daylight. His real name was Shimon Hayut. He had used other names before, he would use more after. At this stage, that fact was invisible to the women caught inside the story. To them, he was still Simon. Still the man on the jet. Still the voice promising this would end soon. The first destabilizing moment did not come from police or journalists. It came from absence. Messages slowed. Calls went unanswered. Plans dissolved without explanation. When contact resumed, it came with anger. He accused them of doubt. He accused them of disloyalty. He said questioning him put them both at risk. That reversal mattered. The man who once paid for everything now demanded proof of devotion. The relationship shifted from romance to management. The women found themselves tracking expenses, negotiating with banks, hiding debts from friends and family. The secret he demanded grew heavier by the day. By the end of this phase, the lie was fully installed. The luxury was no longer a promise of future comfort. It was evidence used to justify present fear. The jet was not a reward, it was a prop. The danger was not external. It was the mechanism that kept the money moving. What none of them knew yet was how many others were inside the same structure at the same time. Different names, different cities, the same collapse waiting its turn. The question at the close of this chapter is simple and sharp. When fear is manufactured and love is weaponized, how long can belief survive before the story breaks? Chapter 2. The Pressure System. The second phase did not announce itself. It slid in under the weight of what had already been given. Once the first payment cleared, the story hardened. It gained rules. There were right moves and wrong ones now. Timing mattered. Silence became dangerous. He adjusted his tone. Less charm, more command. Messages came in bursts, fast and clipped. He said his security team advised constant movement. He said phones were compromised. He said banks were watching. The money requests follow the pattern. They always arrived attached to a countdown, a flight boarding, a hotel checkout, a supposed threat nearby. He framed each transfer as a temporary patch in a war zone. The amounts increased, but not all at once. He tested limits. When a credit card went through, he pushed again. When it declined, he redirected. Loans entered the picture, disguised as solutions. He explained which lenders approved quickly. He coached language. Emergency. Business partner. Short-term bridge. He promised repayment dates down to the hour. 7:45 a.m. tomorrow. Noon by the latest. The precision felt reassuring. It was not honored. What the women could not see was the rotation. Money sent by one was used almost immediately to sustain the illusion for another. Flights, hotels, the same watch, the same car, the same photos recycled with small changes in angle or light. The lifestyle did not belong to him. It was leased by belief. He kept the women separate by design. Secrecy was framed as protection. Enemies tracked everything, you said. Friends could not be trusted. Family would panic and make mistakes. He positioned himself as the only calm voice in the storm, he described. Isolation deepened dependence. With no outside reference point, the story became the environment. Inside it, his explanations always arrived faster than doubt. He anticipated questions because he had heard them before. Why could he not meet in person again? Too risky. Why not involve police? Corrupt. Why not slow down? People could die. Pressure sharpened intimacy. He alternated reassurance with withdrawal. When a payment arrived, he flooded them with affection. When it did not, he went cold. The emotional whiplash trained compliance. Approval became currency. Some women began to sense fractures. A promised transfer missed its window. A story changed slightly. A city mentioned that did not align with flight times. When they pressed, he reframed. Stress made him forgetful. Trauma scrambled details. Questioning him went choosing suspicion over love. Debt accumulated quietly at first. Then all at once. Minimum payments replaced savings. New credit lines covered old ones. The women tracked balances in secret, calculating how long they could hold out until repayment arrived. Each day without resolution raised the cost of walking away. He exploited sunk cost without naming it. After everything we have been through, he would say, after all you have done for me, leaving now would make it meaningless. Staying offered a chance to turn sacrifice into reward. The structure was efficient because it mirrored real relationships under stress. People in danger ask for help. Partners step up. Emergencies compress decision-making. He did not invent those dynamics. He hijacked them. The first real crack came when the pace slipped. He was late. Not minutes, hours, then days. Messages shortened again, but this time without explanation. When contact resumed, it carried irritation. He accused them of pressure. He accused them of doubt. He said the situation was worsening because of their anxiety. That inversion marked a shift. The women were no longer being rescued. They were being managed. Their role was to stabilize him, financially and emotionally, while their own lives destabilized. Some tried to slow the flow. They asked for proof. He responded with partial gestures. Screenshots cropped tight. Audio messages recorded in cars. A blurry photo meant to show movement. Enough to reset hope without resolving anything. Others reached breaking points. They confided in a friend. They searched his name. They found fragments that did not fit. Different aliases. Prior warnings buried in forums. The realization did not land all at once. It came in waves, each heavier than the last. Confrontation triggered a familiar script. He denied. He deflected. He reframed himself as the victim of mistrust. He promised clarity soon. He threatened disappearance. "If you cannot stand by me now," he said, "I cannot protect you anymore." By the end of this chapter, the illusion was strained but intact for some. The machine still ran. Money still moved. But the system depended on momentum, and momentum was slowing. The stake now was not just financial ruin. It was collapse of identity. To accept the truth meant accepting that the relationship itself had been engineered, that intimacy had been used as a tool, that love had been converted into leverage. The question pressing forward is no longer whether the story is true. It is how much damage will occur before the story can no longer sustain itself. Chapter 3. Exposure and Cost. The collapse did not come with sirens. It came with comparison. One woman noticed a detail she could not ignore. A message forwarded by accident. A name that was not hers. A sentence written as if copied and pasted. She sat with it for a night, then another. By morning, she searched differently, not for reassurance, for pattern. Another woman, Weeks later, did the same. She reached out to a stranger whose name appeared briefly on a screen. The reply came back fast and careful. Yes, him too. Same jet, same danger story, same promises. The illusion did not shatter in a single moment. It fractured. Small confirmations stacked until denial became heavier than truth. Timelines lined up. Amounts matched. Language repeated. The fear that once isolated them now connected them. They compared messages. The words were nearly identical. The emergencies arrived on the same schedule. The excuses followed the same arc. When one woman stopped paying, another was already being primed. What had felt personal revealed itself as procedural. The man's movements made sense only when viewed together. The gaps in communication matched moments when he was with someone else. The silence that felt like punishment was simply rotation. The luxury had been financed by belief, then recycled to generate more. Journalists entered after the victims had already done the hardest work. Evidence was organized. Screenshots archived. Financial records aligned. Aliases traced. What could be proven was separated from what could only be alleged. The story tightened under verification. The public exposure stripped the performance of oxygen. The jet was identified as chartered. The photos traced to borrowed moments. The wealth that once silenced doubt could no longer hide under scrutiny. Law enforcement involvement clarified boundaries. Some actions fit charges. Others fell into gaps created by jurisdiction and timing. Not every loss could be recovered. Not every lie carried a legal consequence. The distinction mattered, but it did not soften impact. For the women, the reckoning was immediate and personal. Credit scores collapsed. Collection calls began. Bank statements became evidence of damage rather than generosity. They explained debts to families who had never met the man who caused them. Shame complicated recovery. Many blamed themselves before blaming the system that had exploited them. They replayed conversations. They searched for the moment they should have stopped. The question haunted them because the answer implied control they never truly had. The truth was harder. The scam worked because it mimicked real emotional dynamics under stress. It worked because it targeted trust, not ignorance. Intelligence did not protect against it. Independence did not immunize against it. The mechanism required only empathy and pressure. Public reaction split along familiar lines. Some expressed sympathy, others questioned judgment. The scrutiny reopened wounds. Victims found themselves defending their own credibility while still carrying financial ruin. The men at the center of the story did not disappear. He adapted. Exposure changed tactics, not impulse. Consequences arrived unevenly. Some were formal. Some were social. None restored what had been taken. What remained were lessons without comfort. Online platforms promised connection but offered little protection once intimacy crossed into private channels. Financial systems moved quickly when loans were profitable and slowly when harm followed. Legal remedies lagged behind digital speed. The final cost was not only money. It was the corrosion of trust. Relationships after the fact carried suspicion that had not been earned by new partners. The memory of manufactured urgency lingered. Silence still felt dangerous, long after the threat had been named as false. The women rebuilt in different ways. Some spoke publicly to warn others. Some withdrew to recover privately. None exited unchanged. The experience rewired how they assessed risk, affection, and belief. There was no clean ending. No courtroom moment that balanced the scale. There was only exposure, accountability where possible, and a shared understanding of how easily love could be converted into leverage. The story closes, not with justice, but with residue, a caution that intimacy when weaponized, leaves damage that persists long after the lie is identified.